Among the major races that Massachusetts voters will soon decide is who will become the new member of Congress in the state's 3rd District. It's a sprawling, diverse district now represented by retiring Congresswoman Nikki Tsongas. Last week on Radio Boston, we heard from the Democratic candidate Lori Trahan and Republican Rick Green. But this is a three-way race with independent candidate Mike Mullen also on the ballot. Mullen lives in Maynard. He's an IT director for a managed care company, and he joins us in studio. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So I want to start where we began with the other two candidates in this race, and that was asking about their experience and why they think they have the experience needed to be in Congress.
Sure. I was first interested in politics when I was younger. I worked for Congressman Frank and Governor Dukakis in college and then ran for school committee, Lincoln Sudbury Regional District. So kind of had it in my blood from back then. My role today is to bring the business and technology together and develop solutions. So it's similar to a Congress as far as working with constituents and delivering services. I got into the race because I think it's way too divisive these days. Unfortunately, what was just on the news before is a symptom of that. So I think we need to be able to talk to each other and be able to have that dialogue to make that progress forward. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I end up getting into the race.
So Barney Frank, Mike Dukakis.
Yes.
Experience. Democrats.
Back then I was a Democrat. I've been unrolled probably for 20 years, I think. So as far as my philosophy, a lot of that colors it, but I like to be able to look at each issue on its own merits.
And that's why you're an independent.
That, and I'm not happy with the way the party system's been working the last few years. You had the 47% with the Mitt Romney and the basket of deplorables with Hillary Clinton. And to what your previous guests were just talking about, I don't like when people are when it trickles down to the supporters that way. You can disagree about your leaders, but I think we need to be able to treat each other with respect and civility. So trying to do that from the outside as an independent.
So what party do you think you'd mostly caucus with in Congress then, elected?
I think it would depend on what is best for the 3rd District. And most of my positions have aligned more on the Democrat side, but not across the board. So I'd have to see what...
Right. In other races where independents have run with a similar philosophy, thinking that they, you know, that the established parties were not something that they wanted to affiliate with and that they actually wanted to make a statement on their own, there's always the concern expressed that it would take away from a candidate that independent may have favored had they been with another party, in your case, the Democratic Party, right? So folks might say, well, you're going to take away votes from Lori Trahan and you might get a Republican elected in that seat.
Right. That's probably the hardest question. One of the things that I've been advocating for is different political reform. Something like ranked choice voting would help in that regard. And my other point there is if we continue down the same road, we can't expect change. So we need to make that change at some point. And I think we need to continue on. Einstein had a quote of doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results is the definition of insanity. I think we need to break the chain and move forward if you agree with what I'm saying. Mm-hmm.
You know, we spoke with Evan Falchuk on Radio Boston last year. He founded a third party in mm-hmm. Massachusetts, and then he ran for governor unsuccessfully in 2014. And last year, he said he abandoned this new party. He joined the Democrats, and this is what he said. Let's listen.
We've got a real threat to our democratic process happening mm-hmm. right now, a crisis of serious scale, and we've got to take sides. And that's why I chose to pick this side. The Democrats are the only organization strong enough to actually stand up to the threat of Trump and at the same time to articulate a vision that is better than what we have today.
So what do you say to those folks who say, you know, right now especially, we might have to try to unify? What would you say?
I do think we need to unify, but I would argue that it's better to do it outside the party system. I played rugby for a long time and had read the book Playing the Enemy, which is about the South African World Cup team that Mandela used to kind of bring people together. And when he came out of prison, he worked with the people who had oppressed him and tried to build that coalition because he realized that he needed to kind of bring both sides together, find something common to rally around. So I think doing it outside the system is... unfortunately, the way that we need to do it at this point.
When we had the other two candidates running, we just asked them a couple of quick questions
sure.
about policy and where they stand or if they have particular ideas about big issues. So mm-hmm. I'd like to do the same with you. Opioid epidemic, your thoughts on how to address that?
I think one of the first things we need to do is expand access to medically assisted treatment that's been proven to work. It's the type of challenge that you can't do on your own. So that's one area. My background is in workers' compensation, and that's one of the areas where the crisis started. From the chronic pain perspective, people who are injured at work typically have that strain, sprains, breaks. And so looking at things like prescription drug monitoring, physician dispensing, those are things that we can do in that area. And then also look where the problems are. So allowing medically assisted treatment in for people who are incarcerated and hooking them up with the appropriate help when they get out. I think Sheriff Katusian in Middlesex County does a good job of making sure people have care when they leave.
Well, they don't do all forms of medication-assisted treatment, though, for people who are incarcerated. Methadone and buprenorphine, they're not.
Right. So, that's what I'd be advocating for to be able to do. They've started a pilot down in Rhode Island. They found the overdose rate dropped dramatically when they started with that.
Right. And you think that should be expanded here, including to the Middlesex County jail? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Border security.
I think border security is important. I think we need a comprehensive reform, though. I do support a path to citizenship. I also think that we need to upgrade our immigration system as far as modernization. And I think it's important. When I joined the race, immigration wasn't quite as high up on the list, but I think it's being used to divide us, which is sad. We're a nation of immigrants, so I think we need to move forward with that very quickly.
Sanctuary cities?
I think that needs to be done on a city-by-city basis. I don't think we can dictate that at the state or the national level. I think local law enforcement needs to know what's important in their areas. And when it's dictated at a higher level, I think it ends up being an unfunded mandate. That's not what local police forces are charged with or funded for.
And what about guns, background checks, gun legislation? How would you deal with that?
Sure. Parkland's actually one of the reasons I got in the race. After that, I had gone into the on the common when they had the gathering. And I was thinking back to what the president said after Sandy Hook, that we can do better. And I think in areas like gun violence, that's something that we need to consider, making that incremental progress. And this is an area where there's a fair amount of consensus on background checks, banning assault weapons, those type of things.
Mm. Healthcare. What do we do about the Affordable Care Act?
I'm in favor of moving to a Medicare for All system.
Single payer?
Single payer. I come from the healthcare industry, particularly on the payer side. There's a lot of complexity there that I think could be solved with a single payer. I also think we need to be able to right-size care and have the appropriate delivery model. For example, nurse practitioners in 23 states have what's called full practice authority, and that allows them to do things they're trained for, but in a state like Massachusetts, they aren't allowed to do without physician supervision. That adds to costs and removes the breadth of care. There's more nurse practitioners that could deliver care in a wider amount of space.
I want to ask you about a local issue here. It was an issue that we did speak about earlier in the show as well, and that's the Columbia Gas issue, mm-hmm. because we did hear today that the deadline by which Columbia Gas said it might have everything restored is actually going to have to be pushed back into mid-December now, when it was supposed to be November 19th. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, thousands of people up there struggling. Yep. Businesses, we spoke with businesses yesterday. They've been closed for 6 weeks now because of this. What should Congress do in a situation like this, when you've got thousands of people up there? Is there anything Congress can do?
I think the letter that the legislators just sent is important as far as the emergency funding for economic challenges with the disaster. And I think the local government has done a good job as far as setting up those funds that people can apply to. I think $2 million was added in the last few days. Mm-hmm. And I also think this is something that should be factored into our energy policy going forward. Some of the new forms of energy get shot down because of costs and so forth. But I don't think we always account for the infrastructure and the maintenance needs from the legacy and more mature forms of energy. So I think we need to bring that into debate as well.
So we need to look at restructuring our energy delivery system?
I do think we need to be able to account for all of the costs. So as you guys were just discussing, there's a lot of danger and costs that are associated with the existing system. We need to be able to account for that appropriately and then factor that into our decision models in the future. I think we need to upgrade our energy grid, make it more weather smart, be able to take advantage of, like out west, there's good solar and wind, but we can't take advantage of that in the east. And renewables today have a reliability challenge that we need to address.
What would you say is the number one issue you're hearing about on the campaign trail?
I think healthcare and the opioid epidemic are probably the two top issues.
And folks, when they do talk about those issues, they are saying that they really want Congress to address
I think healthcare in particular, I think the pre-existing conditions is really resonating with folks. That's one of the reasons also I got into the race. I have a friend who has inflammatory breast cancer, and she started off in private practice as an attorney. When she came down with the illness, she was under her husband's plan, but she had previously had her own plan. She wouldn't be able to probably be here right now between pre-existing condition, lifetime limits, those type of things. Mm-hmm. My brother-in-law has multiple sclerosis. He works in the seasonal industry. He wouldn't have as good a care without something like the Affordable Care Act.
Some campaign data, I believe it's the latest campaign data, suggests that you raised about $13,000, gave your campaign $5,000 loan, and that's compared to about $725,000 raised by Republican Rick Green, about $1.2 million raised by Democrat Lori Trahan. How do you keep up with that kind of money?
It's challenging. One of the things that I've made a top priority in my campaign is political reform. I think public financing would make a lot of sense. I think reversing Citizens United, having things like nonpartisan redistricting. Right now, money plays a huge part of this, and there was even more money in the primaries. Rufus Gifford had $2 million. Dan Coe had $3 million. So it is very challenging to keep up with that. You can do a little bit with technology these days, but not quite that big a gap.
So what do you make of that bitter primary fight with all the Democrats who were seeking to become the nominee? What does it say about the district to you?
The district. I think from a standpoint, there was a lot of engagement. I was impressed by all the candidates. I think it was nice to see diversity. It was half women, half men, different people of color. So from that standpoint, I think it was good to get a lot of different folks involved in the picture. From my standpoint, I started a little bit late and sort of sucked a little bit of the oxygen out of the room as far as a lot of people involved already. So getting the support later on has been a little bit more challenging. But there was a lot of engagement there.
Okay. Mike Mellon, independent candidate running for Congress in Massachusetts' 3rd Congressional District. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And listeners, last week, as we said, we spoke with Democrat Lori Trahan and Republican Rick Green. You can find those conversations at our website, radioboston.org. Stay with us. Coming up, did some of those accused of witchcraft during the Salem witch trials escape to the Framingham area and hide in caves? Well, we go take a walk in the woods there to look. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.